to avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a podcast.
Greetings, boys and ghouls, whatever corny phrase we want to use this time. Hey, we're still working on an opener, but once again, thank you for joining us for another fun episode of the Podcast Macabre. I'm Chris, and we have Joe.
Hello, hello.
And Don.
Yo.
And Jennifer's with us again. Yay!
Yay!
She has finally risen from the dead.
Literally.
Yeah, it was dicey for a little while there.
You'd say you tried to have your own werewolf movie because you had a little bit of hair of the dog?
Oh, I should have. But I instead I took a nap.
So, folks, anybody who's been following us on the podcast page on Facebook, if you have, thank you. If not, how the hell did you find our show? If someone shared it to you, thank them for us. But this episode... and our usual two-parter that we'll be doing because, hey, we block our time when we record.
And we're chatty fuckers.
Yes. And, of course, chimpanzees riding on Segways. Motorized monkeys. God, then we're going to have to talk about Planet of the Apes. But, hey, that's its own thing. this episode, folks, as you can tell, I just had a whole French press full of coffee. today, we're going to be talking about a horror movie remakes. Love them, hate them. However you want to go with it, we're going to be sharing some of our ones we've liked, and then also we're going to be hitting on ones we absolutely love and ones we would rather just shoot and bury in a ditch. So I guess just to start off, let's hit up on the definition of it, remakes and reboots. You guys just think those terms are interchangeable?
Interchangeable, yes and no, only because some reboots actually, just in my own opinion... some of them will actually stay very true to what the original was, and others will just kind of gloss over it so they can give their own spin as the movie progresses.
Okay.
So it's kind of a very, very, like, thin line.
Okay.
See, right. I think they mean about the same thing.
Yeah.
I think they just started using reboot when remake got, like, that negative connotation.
You mean Michael Bay?
Yes.
See, that's why I forgot my own research this week. Speaking of Michael Bay, he was the producer for the Friday the 13th reboot. Ugh. Yeah.
But... I heard that.
What's your thoughts, Jen?
Well, now you've got Friday the 13th. Oh. Sorry. Anyway, no, that's okay. To me, a reboot takes the existing material and either adds to canon or changes canon to work with the times that the reboot is in versus the time the original came out. And a remake, when I hear remake, I think more like Psycho, where it's really... boom, 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 boom. Here's step A, here's step B, here's step C, and just kind of goes with the flow of the original.
Right, so that would be, yeah, with the Gus Van Sant that I've got on my list somewhere. shot-for-shot remake of Psycho,
yep.
That's our friend and fandom person, Kevin Smith, is fascinated with Anne Heche's butthole from that movie.
Let's all go inside.
We all know the song.
Hello, echo, echo, echo.
Yeah, I can get that with, say, part of the viewing I did last night. Actually, I watched for the first time the Carrie remake, and yeah, I'd count that as a remake versus say like with as we said, Michael Bay's Friday the 13th. That's a definite reboot of a franchise, and then with the Last Nightmare on Elm Street one, that was a definite reboot of a franchise. And so then you get into kind of that gray area of like the Evil Dead movie.
Ugh.
Yeah. Well, there's no gray area on how we feel about it, but I mean, by definition, would you say that's a reboot?
I'm
going to
say this.
Remake?
I love Bruce Campbell to death, but the next time if I ever see him, I'm punching him in the gut. Because he sold that fucking movie so hard that I'm like, okay, I want to, I'm going to save it for later. I'm going to save it for later. Hold on. Erase. Okay, go ahead.
I'm staying silent on purpose on that one.
So, okay, we kind of, and as we talked a little bit before we got started with recording, that I found out my own misinterpretation of, I used to think the word retcon fit into remakes and reboots, but then I actually looked it up and found out that retcon is the shortening of the phrase retroactive continuity. So that's when, like, as you were saying, Joe, before we got on, that's like the jump from Evil Dead to Evil Dead 2, with the way they kind of switched around the storyline a bit. And yeah, that's a definite example of retconning into a sequel. Agreeable?
Now I need to go watch all of those again.
I know. I do too. So, I guess we should start talking about the movies then.
Well, do we want to kind of talk about just our kind of general feelings about remakes beyond which we've all done a little bit?
Yeah, just chew it back. Get that taste out of your mouth.
People would be like, they barf a lot on this podcast.
It's a little bit just that.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
little bubble. I can feel it brimming in the back of my throat. Oy. Okay, yeah. I don't know. I admit anytime I hear there's going to be a remake, I admit I am one of those knee-jerk reactionists of like, why? It was such a good thing. Why do you got to go back and fuck around with it? Versus.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar, eh, Jenny?
Oh. Well, you know, some things are just better left as is.
Tell them the text message you sent me.
Okay. This is not horror related, although I find it rather horrifying, quite frankly. But this whole theme of, oh, hey, we're taking this existing movie and we're changing the races and we're changing the genders and we're, come on. I mean, come on.
She's referring to Uncle Buck, folks. Cause I'm a big John Candy fan. I kind of look like John Candy in certain pictures, I've been told. But, yeah, she's referring to Uncle Buck.
Yeah. I just don't. But on the other hand, if a remake like is done or a reboot is done to embrace, you know, new technologies or to add something to the story, you know, I'll give it a shot, but just remakes for the sake of remakes really piss me off.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of remakes if, and I, that there, that's a very big word there. If it is done right. Even if they're going to change things, like, again, this has nothing to do with horror, but this is the best example I can offer. With the whole thing with, they're redoing the Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I'm a big Fantastic Four fan.
Mm-hmm.
If it's still done right, and they don't deviate too far from the origins of the story, okay, fine. I'll be on board. I'll give it as neutral an opinion as I can. I'll go in there with an open mind. But when you start hearing right off the bat that they've not only changed origins, they've changed characters, and basically the remake is just in name only, that's when I'm not even going to give it a fair shake. I'm just going to look at it like, this is dog shit.
Yeah, that's where I can say, our friends over at the Irish Pubcast, Wayne Talbot and the rest of the crew, Kieran and Darren, they're doing a thing for 2015. They're calling it their Year of Wonder because they're known for getting a bit ranty about things that they just fucking despise. But going off of trailers, they're not even seeing it. So they're trying to change the mindset of we'll give it a chance, and we won't beat the shit out of it until we've seen it, so that we can actually have a formed opinion on it, versus I know for myself that everything I've heard about the Fantastic Four movie coming out, I'm like, it does not secure faith in me. And then I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, doesn't even interest me at all now from watching the trailer. But so I'm trying to be better about reserving judgment. But yeah, there's some things you can look at and just say, you know, bag of shit's a bag of shit.
Hey, you can put as much lipstick on that pig as you want. It's still gonna be a freaking pig in the morning after you sober up.
Yeah. What about you, Joe?
I have an odd relationship with the remakes. I tend to get not really excited about them, but I'll want to see them, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and then inevitably I'll go in and come out, and I was like, why did I just spend my money and waste my 2 hours of time that I could have been doing anything else in the world? And then every so often you'll hit one that just validates your faith in it, and you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe the next one will be good, and it's really not. I guess I'm kind of the same way as you guys. Like, if it's done out of love, or like someone has a real passion for an older film and they want to put out something great, that I can get behind. But when it's just very obviously a cash grab on the name only,
right?
That just burns my ass. You know, yeah. Michael Bay, speaking of earlier, like the whole Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake and a couple others that they had their hand in. It was garbage. Every bit of it was just rubbish.
Yeah. Well, I can say, I know we're deviating again from horror in the discussion of it, but remakes in general, I'd say that some of the ones I actually love, and I own on Blu-ray too, are, say, some of like the anime or animated stuff that's been rebooted into a live version. Because I'm an anime fan too, and Blood the Last Vampire. That, you know, that started out as an anime, and the live action movie for that kicks ass.
I've seen
I had no idea they did a live action of that.
Oh yeah, you gotta find that one, Joe. That one is.
Yeah, because I've seen all the anime of it.
Yeah.
All right.
But my other all time favorite is, I know here for our American audience, it was the Star Blazers cartoon, but the original Japanese cartoon Space Battleship Yamato, that they did a live action of that. And my God, it was a beautiful live action that they took so much straight from the cartoon for the costume designs, the characters, the ships, and everything else, and including the music and all the stuff. And it brought the 8-year-old kid out in me again watching this movie. So, I mean, that's when they do stuff like that, you do so well. But again, that's going animated to live action. So that's its own translation, I guess. But hey, we're a horror movie podcast. We should be talking about horror movie remakes, shouldn't we?
Okay, so let's get on to Annie.
I saw Annie. It was not bad.
That hurts my heart.
I was joking. I was joking.
Seriously, it wasn't horrible.
I never saw the
horrible.
Original, nor did I ever see the remake. So,
I've seen
not my cup of tea.
I've seen the original. I don't know how many times because my wife's a big fan of it. And as soon as we heard about the Jay-Z remake of it, we're like, oh hell no, no.
Well, I won't bring up what Ralph Garman calls that.
No.
You gotta do it now.
Yes,
he refers to the remake as canny.
Yes.
Oh dear God.
And,
yes.
And it's one of those where I laugh in spite of myself. I don't mean to, but
yes, we should admit that all four of us are. I know our sense of humor tends to drift towards that thing of we're going, oh, that's not right.
Mostly, yeah, especially me.
We feel bad as we laugh.
Yes. So,
but hey, I'll kick it off for different. Well, yeah, I already mentioned I watched last night. I watched the Carrie remake, and that falls into one of those. I liked it. It's not one I loved. I mean, that's there for me. There's the whole difference between the original with Brian De Palma. Brian De Palma's style is so distinctive in the way that he does a movie. And then I honestly can't remember off the top of the head the director who did the new one, but there's enough of the story. I mean, even the dialogue and everything else that for something that's done about 30 years later from the original and stuff you get away with in the 70s in a movie that of high school drama and horror that you can't get away with now, that it did fairly faithfully. And then there's just enough flavor, including the ending, that made it its own. So it wasn't just like, we're just redoing the whole thing, because the actual ending used more from Stephen King's novel than the original did.
Well, if I can jump in just one second.
Sure.
This is the thing about the movie Carrie. One of the things, number one, I don't like, I watched it once. It was in spots that I watched it. I have a very big, you know, emotional response to movies like this, because it does focus somewhat on bullying, and I, even though my self-imposed nickname is Bully when I play hockey, I really hate movies that involve bullying, because it elicits such an angry response out of me. It's like flipping a switch. I mean, I'll be nice and cuddly and nice or whatever, but you get me watching those movies, I get instantly pissed off.
Right.
And so I can't watch those movies. The thing about that is that I don't like about the original or any of the remakes, or if you want to count The Rage as a remake.
That's more sequel.
That was more.
Yeah.
The thing I dislike is the fact that in the book, Carrie was an overweight girl. And for whatever reason, in the movies, they're like, well, let's make her thin. Let's make her kind of gangly. And I'm sorry, you know, if this sounds wrong, but I don't know if, to me, it would have worked a lot better or worse if they would have just stuck with how the character looked. Because I can tell you, growing up in high school, you grow up fat, you're like a triple threat. You know? First of all, if you're fat, you got that. Then you got me, who was tomboyish. That's the second one. And then, because of I didn't fit in any category as far as like burnouts, cool kid, whatever, I was an outcast. So when you throw the fat on top of it, pardon the pun, it's worse. It literally is fucking hell. And I got ragged on a lot for my fucking weight. Why they deviated that from the story into the movies, I'll never know, because I think it would have made a better movie.
I can say from watching the movie though last night, it does make. I've never read the novel. I know enough of the like skeletal outline of it, but it's actually watching that last night makes me want to go and read the book now, to just really to compare between both the movies and what else was in the novel and stuff. I can say for myself the bit that seems slightly cliche in this time, in this day and age, and made me laugh but bugged me at the same time, kind of, as in the new one that they do mention that Carrie was sheltered and homeschooled. We homeschool my daughter, so
oh boy.
Anytime they try to use a stereotype of homeschoolers, not all homeschoolers are psycho, self-harm cutting religious psychopaths.
Well, if it helps, Chris, my mom initially got Carrie the novel for my oldest sister, who also was overweight, as a way of empowering. I'm thinking, you want her to go on a killing spree at a high school gymnasium?
She wanted her to develop telekinesis. Hello?
I guess. Make them float. Make them... Oh, God. They all float down here. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I will say, the one real shining bit, because really the only name actors out of that whole movie that were Julianne Moore, Chloe Moretz, and I forget the name of the actress who played the gym teacher, but she was the crazy receptionist secretary on Arrested Development, the one who kept fleshing her tits at people.
Judy Greer.
Yes.
Judy Greer, yep.
Yeah. But, yeah, and Julianne Moore did excellent in that. The way that she played crazy was excellent, but it's Julianne Moore. You don't expect shit work from her. But
well, and yeah, I liked her portrayal better than I liked Piper Laurie's.
Piper Laurie.
Brian De Palma does tend to go over the top. That's
yes,
kind
he
of
go he goes camp at times.
So I get it, but personally for me, I was able to be actually scared of Julianne Moore's mom way more than because Piper, you're not going to laugh at you. Yeah, I know. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, sure. Tell me something I don't know.
So, who's got another one they want to talk about?
Are we talking like the best one that we've seen?
Well, I think, remember, folks,
I got a migraine.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah, at least for this first part of the two-parter, we're just kind of focusing on in general. And I know we're gonna have a lot of debate time for loves and ones we really really love and ones we really really hate. So we'll save that for the second show.
Well, I'm gonna definitely because there's one movie you guys keep pegging that I'm saving for the second one because I'm gonna defend it tooth and fucking nail, but maybe not tooth and fucking nail. But anyway,
your hill has been chosen.
You shall not cross here no further. Anyway, yeah, I'm sorry for our people across the pond. Yeah, that was the worst accent you'll ever fucking hear. This one was kind of hard for me because there have been a lot of remakes that I thought were way better than the originals.
Hmm.
Yes, Red Dragon I thought was one of them. Sorry. I mean, I know it was largely forgettable.
Well,
for you guys, because of, I don't know if it was because of Edward Norton, but.
Well, I thought we talked a little bit earlier in the week, because I know we're trying to decide with both Manhunter and Red Dragon, are those more of a crime thriller or a horror? But I guess,
right. It depends on who you ask, because in Red Dragon, I mean, if you think about it, I wouldn't call it a thriller because I mean, I'm sorry, he sets a guy on fire and rolls him down a hill. I mean, then another guy, he shoots him, splays him, puts a glass mirror into their eye and all that stuff. I mean, it depends on your definition of horror, but that's why I'm kind of taking that one off the board. If it was Silence of the Lambs, different fucking story.
Oh, yeah.
But Red Dragon, I think, is a little different than Silence of the Lambs, and not for the reasons you're thinking. Right. But
well, because you could definitely. I freely admit it's been a long time since I watched Red Dragon because I didn't really like the movie, but I am a huge huge fan of Michael Mann's Manhunter. So
word
and yeah Manhunter.
Ick. Just. Ick. And I'm going to tell you why before you jump on it.
Well, just let me say, I like Manhunter to me, though I do categorize that as a crime thriller. So.
Okay, that one would be a crime thriller, but here's why I did not like Manhunter.
There's
two reasons. One, when I was starting to get into the Harris novels of, Red Dragon,
Silence of the Lambs,
and then Hannibal, I enjoyed the novelizations. Now, granted, you're rarely, and this could be a subject for a movie somewhere down, not a movie, for a podcast somewhere down the road. You will rarely ever find a novelization where the movie is as good as such.
True.
You will rarely find that. I think the only exception I've ever found was probably Stephen King's Trucks. And the short story was great, but Maximum Overdrive was outstanding.
I don't know, I would throw in Silence of the Lambs for that.
But it's been a while since I've actually read that.
Yeah.
But as far as Manhunter goes, and I love William Peterson, I do like Michael Mann, but there was just something about that movie, it sucked! I don't know if it was, what was his name? He was the, captain in Super Troopers, he played Hannibal
Lecter. Brian Cox.
There you go.
Yeah.
I did not like, I don't know if it's because I saw Silence of the Lambs prior, but I did not like his depiction of Hannibal Lecter. It just didn't, I had no interest. And having,
see, that was probably
his name,
it.
Yeah.
And having William Peterson as Will Graham just, it lacked.
See, I saw Manhunter way before I even knew anything about Silence of the Lambs, and my dad actually sold me on seeing Lambs because he's like, oh, remember the crazy guy in Manhunter? Well, he's played by a different guy in this, and it's all about him and this FBI agent. So that maybe that is it. Like, and were you the same way, Chris?
Well,
did you see Manhunter first?
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw Manhunter long before I even knew. Well, yeah, because oh, good Lord, I'm trying. Because I didn't even remember the movies being connected. Because I saw I watched Manhunter all the time, and then it didn't click for me until I went back and watched it again, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is the same people. This is Hannibal Lecter. This is how that, you know, I didn't piece it together. To me, they were two separate entities for a while.
We just need Lucas to do a remake and just, you know, put in the ghost of Anthony Hopkins.
God.
It'll be all
God.
Set.
But,
point to the box set where Lucas touched your childhood.
What was the, oh my God, it was on the Big Bang Theory where they were saying nothing puts fear into a heart more than hearing the George Lucas edition, director's cut.
Yeah.
But as far as trying to pick what would be probably my favorite, I'm going to have to honestly go to, and this is kind of hard because I actually kind of like some of the ones me and Amanda were discussing, but the one that strikes it for me is probably House on Haunted Hill.
Hmm.
And I hear crickets in the distance. Anyway.
Actually, I like that movie.
I was revisiting the original the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I mean, don't get me wrong. The original was great.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going – the one scene where the old blind lady comes out and just out of nowhere and then floats off, that was a little jarring.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I would assume for at the time that the film was originally released, that was probably going to give a lot of people some fainting spells. But I liked how the remake stayed true, even to the surprise ending, which, again, folks, come on. These movies have been out for decades.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, fuck off.
Yeah, this is a total free-range spoiler zone, folks. So whatever we talk about today, sorry.
Exactly. But, and I didn't mean to say fuck. Oh, sure I did. Anyway.
Yeah.
But the remake stayed true to the story's origin. It stayed true to, from beginning to end. The only thing that deviated besides the length and the special effects was at the very beginning, if I remember correctly, wasn't, the main character, Jeffrey Rush.
Jeffrey Rush. Right?
Wasn't he like a millionaire made off of like amusement parks or something like that? Am I getting that confused with another movie?
I don't know if he made it off of that, but I know he had something to do with it because the beginning of it, he had like the fake elevator thing where it supposedly dropped as they were going up some ride or something.
Right. And the only other deviations were the only people who died in the original was the wife and her lover. In the remake, everyone except for two people passed away. So that's where it deviated really, you know, big time, but I think it made it that much better.
Well, first of all, any movie with Jeffrey Combs automatically is awesome.
Jeffrey Combs?
He was the crazy doctor.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, wait a minute, back up. Rush, Jeffrey Rush, but remember.
Yeah. He was the millionaire.
Okay. But,
and Franca Jason was his wife.
Oh, love her.
Me too. I was working at a movie theater. I was assistant manager when that came out. And there were only me and it was like two people in the theater when we screened it. And like in the catacombs with the creepy little thing that like kind of vibrated and then moved quickly. For whatever reason, that creeped me out to no fucking end. And my friend Mike, who was screening it with me, right after that, he's like, man, I want a cigarette, but I don't want to go outside. Is it cool if I just smoke right here? So he kind of just walked over to the emergency door and kind of propped it open just enough to blow the smoke out of it. And then a little bit later, he's like, I want to go grab a drink. Will you come out in the lobby with me? Oh, it gets better. We actually ended up running to the bathroom together, getting a drink, and then running back into the theater to finish watching it.
Well, that's what I'm trying to remember is Castle. That's the name of the guy. He was the producer for House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah, he had all the gimmick movies.
Yeah, because he had the with House on Haunted Hill, it was the floating skeleton that came out across the audience. And with the Tingler, you had the vibrating seats. Scream, scream for life! And the ghost vision glasses for the original 13 Ghosts, which is another remake. Which actually I liked the remake 13 Ghosts too.
I did too.
It was a nice update.
I know I've seen it, but I don't remember anything about it.
The only thing that bummed me out is I'm a big fan of DVD extras. And when I was watching the extras for 13 Ghosts, they talked about how they had books of the like background stories for each of the ghosts. But they don't tell any of it.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'd love to know more about the dude with the cage on his head and the, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But no, they don't say a word about it. They're like, oh yeah, we sat down for hours and we wrote all this stuff. Well, how about you give it to us? How about that?
Give it time. There could be a Blu-ray re-release and they might include it on that.
Oh, it's so irritating.
Well, Jen, what's a remake you want to throw up?
This one tends to get mixed reactions, but I really love the remake of Dawn of the Dead. I really love it. I saw it in the theater. It creeped me out. I watch it probably a couple of times a year. I really like it. I mean, I'm not by any means saying that it surpasses the original, because I really love the original too, but I really thought they did a nice job with the remake.
I'll say I do have that actually on my list as like ranked second for my favorites of remakes, because it stands up well on its own. It's enough of a tweaking and retelling, but still drawn from the original source material. I mean, originally I admit I was one of those people like zombies don't sprint, but it adds its own level and element of, it's that extra tension of, you can't just, they're not going to shamble after you. You have to run for your fucking life now.
Yeah, it just adds an urgency and a almost a panic to, like an anxiety to the whole thing. And I just, from the minute I saw the trailer with the little neighbor girl showing up at their bedroom door, like, of course, when you see the trailer, you don't know it's the, like, I thought it was their kid, because random kids don't wander into my house generally, so...
Yeah,
you know, but it just was like the hair just went up on the back of my neck, and it was like, oh, I'm in. Sign me up.
I could say, too, that's one of those random segue point of, I didn't realize that, I'm trying to remember the lead actress.
Sarah Paulson.
Yeah, Sarah Paulson. I didn't realize until like a year or so after seeing that movie that she's the little girl from The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Really?
Yeah.
Should I didn't know that either?
And that's one to grow on.
The more you know.
La la la.
The Dawn remake's definitely up there for me as well. So I would have had that on my like list. I went into the theater with zero expectations for that one and came out just like super happy, even with the sprinting zombies. It's like, shit, that was really, really good.
And what are
the
movies?
I'm the same way. I watch it like at least once or twice a year.
What other movies out there that's got people golfing off the roof of a mini mall as Dick Cheese's Down with the Sickness is playing?
One of the best horror soundtracks of all time. It's just so spot on. It's so good.
Well, yeah, and Johnny Cash doing When the Man comes Around for the opening credits.
Yeah, that opening was beautiful.
Oh, so good.
At the very end, when they were doing the end credits, they have all these things about the little, you know, they cut to like really quick pictures of the zombie horde, but at one point during all that is a pic of the infrared Paris Hilton porn tape.
Oh, that's right.
I forgot about that.
That was awesome.
What's one you got in your like category there, Joe?
You know, I think you mentioned it earlier that you just watched. It was the remake of Maniac.
Yes.
With Frodo.
Yes.
Elijah Wood is so goddamn creepy in that movie.
Did he do a lot of walking?
He did a lot of stalking. And scalping and crazy shit.
Oh, that's what I'll say. Well, yeah, because he even played, first time I really got to see him play kind of creepy was when he played Kevin in Sin City.
Yep.
And he was even creepier in this.
Yes. It was.
But yeah, good. I was a big fan of that one. Our good friend Wayne actually is the one that got me turned on to that because he had talked about great the film was and was like just shouting about how awesome the soundtrack is, which it is just fantastic. That's and just true, adds true. A whole nother layer to it.
Speaking of the soundtrack, that's the thing that hit me that I actually started giggling as I'm watching the movie. Because with the first, when he takes the girl home from the bar, from the video dating, and the music selection she puts on for the vinyl. You know which part I'm talking about, Joe?
I do, but I don't remember the song. It's been a little while since I watched.
It was Goodbye Horses.
Oh, Jesus. That's right. It was.
As soon as it started playing, I'm giggling and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, I'm waiting for her to look at him and say, do you want to fuck me? Or she's got a dick. One of the two.
Night game.
It was funny for that bit, but I watched both the original and the new one in the same night back to back, and the original still holds up for me. It's one of the original reminds me of the grittiness of like Henry Portrait of Serial Killer, because it's so much of the movie is from the perspective of the killer. And just the voices in his head and who he's talking to that's not there and his whole psychoses with where, you know, all of his mommy issues he's got and the scalping of the women and stapling the scalps onto these mannequins that he's taking as his girlfriends and for effects purpose. I mean, you've got the legendary head exploding from the shotgun that Tom Savini, who played the character whose head got blown up. And yeah, that one, that's why it's on the video nasty list, because they did take a shotgun to a mannequin head stuffed with, you know, bits and pieces and blood and shot it point blank through a windshield to explode this head. But then with the new version, that it's goes that step further, and cinematically, I loved it because I'm a sucker for good cinematography, but the camera tricks they had to use, because they didn't go just from showing the person being crazy and what their life is like. They put you in that first person perspective to where 80% of the movie you're looking through Elijah Wood's eyes. It's like the camera's right over his shoulder through the whole thing. And the only time you see him are there's like two dream sequence things. And then, when he sees himself in reflections, which I did love the car reflection. You remember that part, Joe?
Oh, I do, yeah.
And he kills her in the parking lot and scalps her, and you see his reflection in the side of a car body, and it's, boom, exactly the movie poster from the original 1980 Maniac, where he's got the knife in one hand and the dripping scalp in the other, and all you're seeing is him from the waist down. Perfect throwback to the original.
Yeah, this is one I could actually even, like, move this one in the love category.
I know, I'm on the fence for that.
I think, I'm trying to remember Amanda's list, and I remember when we were surfing Netflix a while ago, she saw that on there, and she goes, ooh, they remade Maniac? And I'm like,
I have a feeling she would love it.
She hated it.
Really?
She absolutely hated it. She's seen the original and the remake, and This is one of those things where I wish I had that, still had it down, because she was just going off on how, you know, she loves Elijah Wood, she agrees with you on the fact that he really played a really good creepy character in Sin City. I mean, for an actor who did not say a fucking word, it was creepy. Yeah. But she was so let down with the remake, she just had no words, really. She's like, this was a piece of shit. No offense to anyone who enjoyed it. She just did not care for it.
We're discussing opinions here. We're not degrading opinions here. We're not going to get to that.
I got to sleep with her, so I can't deviate from the opinions too much.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I know we're good friends and we're all respectful to her. It's not going to be like someone throws out their opinion and someone else is going to go, you're a fucking idiot for thinking.
How dare you? I demand satisfaction. I want my honor repaid.
Gauntlet dropped.
This is a safe place.
Which is ironic for the subject matter.
Subject matter?
This is a safe place.
It's a safe place.
Better the crazy you know.
Exactly.
So, let's see. I'll throw out another one that, I love, one that I love from my youth, and I actually did enjoy the remake. It wasn't stupendous, but, Fright Night.
Oh, I liked it too.
David Tennant in tight leather and being just the cocky asshole that he was funny. Was funny. And there's the bit I did point out to my wife as we were watching it, is when they're in the little neighborhood in the cul-de-sac or whatever it is, that you've got, I'm forgetting the characters' names anyways. Well, yeah, you got Brewster, you got his mom, then you got, Colin Farrell as the vampire, and then, guy who's McLovin, who plays his buddy. I'm looking at him like, huh, we got four people, all speaking perfect English, unaccented, but you have a Russian, an Irishman, and an Aussie, and one American.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I hold great pleasure in the original Fright Night. It's one of those, my Aunt Charlene was my movie-going buddy that we both loved horror movies, and sadly she passed about 20 years now, from cancer, but, we make road trips to go catch different horror movies and stuff. And I remember she clued me in on some of the jokes that I was a little bit young to get when we watched Fright Night. Cause, there's a bit in the original after you see Chris Sheridan, Chris Sarandon's, vampire hovering over Charlie Brewster's mom as she's sleeping. And then when he walks out of the room and, you know, breaks the door jam so that the door is jammed shut, and he starts whistling a song as he's walking away. And my aunt just started giggling, and I go, what's so funny? He said, he's whistling Strangers in the Night. And just the little jokes like that and stuff. And, growing up in a town named Brewster, that, you know, you had Evil Ed, Brewster, you're so cool. So there's so many things that are great about the whole show. And then, of course, yes, with Roddy McDowell.
I was thinking what was her fucking name? Amanda Bierce?
Bierce, who's yep. on, yeah, she played the neighbor on Married with Children.
And then you find out years later.
Yes.
She's playing on my team.
Score one for Dawn.
Sorry, go on.
But yeah, I think that the remake was it went in its own way, and it didn't do anything to really disparage the original. There was no moments that I'm like, you're fucking kidding me, or any of that. That it stood on its own, and it was an enjoyable movie. Is it one that I liked enough that I've gone back and like, oh, I need to watch it again? No, but it was good.
You know, I showed the original, this is when I was with, this one woman, God, this was a long time ago. And, she, you know, cause I'm big on Halloween, obviously, not just the movie, the actual, holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But she invited a couple of friends over. She's like, okay, now, because you're the authority on Halloween, pick a movie and we're all gonna carve pumpkins and all that. Now, my first clue, honestly, that she was not gonna like Fright Night should have been the simple fact that this was her idea of Halloween decorating. Getting things like Christmas trees and putting little, like, cutesy Halloween ornaments on them.
Oh, dear.
That should have been my first fucking clue that she was not gonna like this movie.
Well, it's a tree, so it's kind of pagan. I don't know.
Kind of pagan, but not totally. And then once we started carving, I'm the only one paying attention. The other three are just so, you know, carving it into their pumpkins and all that stuff. And she's like carving a cat and cute. Oh, scary kitty cat. And the best part is after the movie is over, she looks at me and goes, yeah, real excellent choice for a Halloween movie. I'm like, yeah, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
She's like, no, that movie sucked.
When you get the Charlie Brown Halloween, or
I was thinking she probably did. She probably did.
The Littlest Witch.
Oh my God! I'm like, really? Nothing? Nothing? This did not scream Halloween team. It's a fucking vampire. You get?
I didn't mind the remake of Fright Night, but I thought the remake did the sin that all modern horror movies tend to fall into, and that's not building tension. They kind of went
right into, you know, Colin's character being like this bastard, and just, there was no build up. It was right there, and then you're downhill the entire movie.
That's true.
So I did miss that little bit of like build up.
Well, then a lot of it too, I think, well, Colin Farrell's just better at playing a bastard. He's not, I don't think he can pull off the suave that Chris Sarandon does. Uh-uh. Yeah, that's two different creatures. So, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It's along the same lines of more modern, going with the jump scare versus letting the tension build, which I know we've discussed at length in the past, especially when we talked about Babadook. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, who's got some other ones they want to throw out there?
One of my all-time favorites actually is the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with
yes.
Donald Sutherland.
Ah.
We watched that. I mean, we had, you know, three channels when I was a kid, so that was on, I want to say, ABC quite a bit, and we would watch it, and just when he'd point,
I just want to throw in a quick note since we're hitting on that version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Leonard Nimoy, you will be missed. Thank you for all that you did, sir.
Indeed.
True story.
So.
They were showing the original and the remake, actually a couple of days ago. And I'm kind of chuckling at all the, you know, campiness of the original. But
yeah.
When you get to that remake, I'm sorry. Leonard Nimoy, you will be missed. But, no.
Well, no, some of it, I think, the perspective to look back with the original, it's that the social commentary it was supposed to be. Well, actually, with the original, the social commentary of the during the McCarthy era. Because it's like they're all, you know, you're going to be all the Reds. You're becoming one of them. You're next. You're next. They're coming for you.
Yeah, but what killed it for me for the remake wasn't so much the story or anything, or if there was any social commentary, because honestly, I had to turn it off. And the main reason I turned it off was the camera work. It was like watching an acid trip, and I've never taken acid.
Well, yeah. It's been a while since I watched it, but as you say that, yeah.
And mind you, this is when my migraine was starting. So I'm sitting there and they're doing this. He's standing at what, you know, in the middle of the road and they're like zipping past him and he's having these inner thoughts and all this crap. I just go, Amanda? Yeah. Remote. Hands me the remote. Click. Started watching something else. I can't even remember what. I was just like, this has got to go. I cannot watch this.
Look, come on, you got a dog wearing a human mask.
It's true.
One of the creepiest scenes ever
of reacted that with that picture of how bad was my headache, only it was kind of flipped. wearing a dog
yes,
mask.
Yes, I forgot that. I'm the one who even said, you look dog tired.
I was exhausted that day. And Juju was just more than confused. But anyway,
yeah.
Like, why am I in your sweatshirt? I mean, it's warm in here, don't get me wrong, but this is fucked up, even for you. I do have one. And then I don't know if I'm going to use this as my defending now, because Michael Bay. See, mm-hmm. The two to me are almost interchangeable. I'm just kidding.
I'm kidding.
Put the pencils down.
Put away your pitchfork.
What's the pencil? I'm going to text that fucker. Not only are you out of date, you're stupid too.
My ire hit about eye level, but I've pushed it back down into my gut, so.
Just kidding. But, no, the thing with the Michael Bay, I'm not even going to call them remakes. I'm going to call them tries.
Abortions is what I would probably go with. But.
You could go with that too. But I'm going to defend the Friday the 13th try just a little bit. It's not my favorite. By any stretch of the imagination. But I did like a couple of aspects about it. The fact that they combined four of the movies into one, number one. Number two, I like Derek Mears and his kind of portrayal because he kind of combined two aspects of the Jason Voorhees character. And again, if you guys have been paying attention, I'm a big Jason Voorhees character fan. If you, the hood of my car, I have a hockey mask on the hood of my car. So people know, don't fuck with this one. Mm-mm. But I don't know. There was just something about his portrayal. It was like a cross between, you know, very angry and at the same time, in some ways, kind of sympathetic. Because there have been moments where, you know, he's sitting there and he's just, I don't want to delve too much into it because I know we're pressed for time, but he just sits there and you can tell he has that look on his face like, what the fuck? And you can't even see his face. It's just character portrayal through the body. Cause he's got this woman he has as a hostage. Yes. Spoiler. He has this woman that he has as a hostage that kind of reminds him of his mother. Hint. Flashing back to the premise of Friday the 13th Part 2. But there are some parts of it I just absolutely did not like. But as far as the differences in the Michael Bay productions where they're trying to reboot the franchise, out of all of them, that one was the least...
offensive?
That would be the best one, because... Me and Amanda were talking at great length. Matter of fact, I can save this for the next one as well, but she absolutely hated the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot.
Yes.
Both of us were not big fans. I mean, we liked the performance to a certain degree, with, the one guy who gave, who got the, nod for, to be Freddy Krueger. But, the Nightmare on Elm Street reboot was okay at best. It wasn't great, but if you have to go with the fuck, marry, kill of the reboots that Michael Bay tries to do, the worst is probably the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Palatable at best would be the Nightmare on Elm Street, and just in this house anyway, the best one would be the Friday the 13th one, because at least that one, it had something to it. The rest of them were just kind of trying to pack way too much and steering way the fuck off course.
I can agree with your ranking on those, but I have not, except for the Nightmare on Elm Street one, because that's the only one out of those I haven't seen. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre one, the only reason really I watched it, I thought I might like it, and if I remember right, I think my wife got me that on DVD for my birthday one year. And that's one of the few birthday gifts I've traded in for store credit at one of the local stores that buys back DVDs. So.
Oh, but with Amanda, it was just a case of what was the biggest thing they always said about the, and I know we're going to tackle this in the next one.
Yeah. We're actually good. We got time to play around since we've stalled a little bit on just our faves. So we can play a little bit here.
Yeah, but with this one, it's really the case of the argument of Halloween, and especially Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's the what you don't see, your mind makes up for, because Texas Chainsaw Massacre was regarded as the goriest, bloodiest movie of its time, and there was very minimal blood shown.
Oh, yeah.
And when we went to go see the remake, they just did not pull any punches with that. It was just like, here you go. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and who can forget Arlie Ermey's eyebrows in that, too?
Yeah,
that distracted me from that whole fucking scene when he shows up as a sheriff and he's got, you know, in Doctor Who, Peter Capaldi says, you know, he's got attack eyebrows. No, he does not have attack eyebrows. Arlie Ermey's character in that had fucking attack eyebrows. They had their own freaking battalion of attack. These things are huge.
Right. And the thing about the remakes is I saw the remake or the try for one reason and one reason only, besides I like, you know, obviously horror, and I was going to give it a shot, is I like the guy who was given the chance to play Leatherface.
Yeah, I like him. What, I forget his name. I always remember him as being the steroided linebacker in The Program.
And he was also in a very largely forgettable Street Fighter. And
oh, yes. Andrew something or other.
God, he was also in, oh God, what the movie with Scott Bakula as the football team.
Necessary Roughness?
Necessary Roughness, that's it. He was in there as well. Yeah.
I'll butcher his last name, but it's Andrew Reinarski.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to give it a shot because of him for the first one. And being a masochist that I am, I went to go see the sequel. And the only reason why I went to go see the sequel is because of Jordana Brewster.
Uh-huh.
That's it. I wasn't expecting a story. I wasn't expecting to be impressed. I was just going for the eye candy. So, that was it.
Again, to go back, like you were saying, with your like of the portrayal of Jason in the remake or reboot, with being wearing a mask but still being expressive. That again harkens back to the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because I love that any retrospective horror shows, when they talk about it, and they always point out that scene that, you know, it's just like Leatherface is having the worst day of his life. He's just trying to do his job. He's in there butchering, and these goddamn kids keep showing up. And there's that whole scene where he just looks like he's losing it, and it's almost like, again, I just watched parts of it last night at Tucker and Dale versus Evil, where they're just like, where do these fucking kids keep coming from? They're just, what's going on?
Oh, Tucker and Dale.
I love that.
Dale.
my big issue with the remake of Texas Chainsaw, and this will come up again later when I rant on another movie, I hate when they make a reason for the people being psychos. I fucking can't stand it. And the original, you know, he probably was kind of simple, low IQ, very clearly came from a crazy, messed up, backwoods ass redneck family. But they didn't like show a flashback of him being treated poorly by his brothers or, you know, molested by his uncle or what the hell ever. In this one, there was that scene where he didn't have his mask on and he was like deformed because of inbreeding.
Yeah, he didn't have a nose or something like that.
Yeah, and he was picked on as a kid. I mean, come the fuck on. That actually, I almost got up and walked out, and I don't walk out of movies. That was almost the last straw for me. And then they chopped his arm off at the end part. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? I never bothered with the second one. Or did they do a third one as well?
I think they kind of did, but it was
They did another like.
I don't want to say it was even a prequel or even a sequel, really. It was just like this one woman find. If I remember the premise, because I didn't see this either, it was a woman finds out she inherited something, and it turns out it's the family's ancestral home,
yeah.
Like Leatherface's and all that.
All right.
Yeah, that's the one that's it's up on Netflix. That's the one that's just called Texas Chainsaw. I almost watched that the other night. Almost, but my better judgment kicked in.
I started to watch that one. I think I got about half an hour into it and was like, you know, I'm done, I think. Now, going on the Michael Bay reboot remakes, another one was Amityville Horror.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch the remake of that.
I remembered that one, and I think, for obvious reasons, I think I completely forgot about it.
It was okay. Melissa George has a weird head and really bothers me. Her head's too humongous. She's like Christina Ricci. She has like a 5-foot head and like a little littlest Pet Shop body. It's really strange. But
I'm Googling this.
And I don't know how they shoot her. I don't know, but every time she's a decent actress. She was in 30 Days of Night, which is a favorite of mine. And
wow.
Yeah.
Her head is just huge. It's huge.
Yeah, I'm going with you on that one.
Sorry, Melissa, you have a big head.
I'm sorry, I gotta throw out just a side note that dawned on me the other day, because I did rewatch 30 Days a Night for the first time in like 8 years the other day, and I didn't realize there's three second generation actors in that film between Josh Brolin, Danny Houston, and Boone. Can't remember his first name.
Mark Boone?
Yeah, the three of those, they're all second generation actors.
You know, just looking at this description of this Melissa George, besides the fact that you're right, she tiny face, really large cranium.
She don't got a 4 head, she got a 5 head.
She, 4, 5, 6, and 7 head. But here's my question. I'm reading this, and it's very confusing. It says this is just her like her personal stats, and I think I get it, but it's just kind of weird. Says spouse, Claudio DeBed, 2000-2012, so obviously they got divorced. Partner, Gene David Blank, 2011. So apparently she was stupin before the divorce, but partner? I thought only we could use that word.
That's our word. We're taking it back.
Partner for life, what's the...
Oh, no, I on side note, as we're, since we're on Melissa George at the moment and her big old forehead, if you guys haven't
seen a freaking coaster on that thing,
any of you guys ever seen a movie called Triangle?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Mm. That's excellent one.
It's so cool.
If you like movies that fuck with your head a bit, that is an excellent movie to watch. But I digress from that.
That one I literally watched 2 times right in a row because, you know, you get your mind all scrambled the first time, and then I immediately restarted it to suss it out.
Yeah.
Because I really liked it.
I'll say too, another Melissa George movie, Lonely Place for Dying, that, if you like beautiful scenery, it's great because there's all this mountain climbing stuff and they're in, I want to say they're in the Scottish Highlands. And it's like, I never knew there was this type of lush. I mean, I'm used to, you know, you think Scottish Highlands, I'm used to seeing Highlander and Braveheart and all this shit. But to see that one, there's some beautiful picturesque scenery that I'm like, I mean, I live at the foothills of the Cascade Mountains up here in Washington. I'm used to like, wow, I did not know this type of scenery is over there. But with that one, I can kind of constitute that movie as a horror movie for myself because I hate heights. And some of the shots that they did with that, oh my God, my heart was in my throat.
And she's gay.
Ah.
I decided to click on the name, and unless that is the most the feminine male I've ever seen, yeah, she's gay.
Or bisexual,
true. Oh. I want to get on to my trivia question.
Bring it.
Okay. But first, I want to ask a question. What constitutes... I know we touched on it at the beginning, but honestly, what constitutes as a remake? Because this would change the answer greatly. But before you answer that question, here's the trivia question. Which horror film has had the most... remakes?
Dracula.
You'll be shocked off your ass when I tell you. Cause
your turn, Joe.
It depends on which, it depends on which definition you go on, because if you go with the interpretation of the site I went to get this information, I don't qualify this at all, but go on.
See, I would have probably guessed Dracula as well, so I'll go another old Universal monster and say The Mummy.
Next. But you're on the right track.
Frankenstein? Hey. I would have said Dracula, so.
I'm just quick on the buzzer.
Indeed.
Depending on which definition you go with. All right? And I don't know if you want to interject music on this one to give our audience a chance before I give the answer. But depending on which course you take, Night of the Living Dead had the most remakes at 9.
Hmm.
But that's if you count, and I don't. There are four of them. There are Night of the Living Dead, like Resurrection, Night of the Living Dead, Rebirth, or something to that effect. I don't count those. To me, those aren't remakes. Either. So the true answer, in my opinion, is Phantom of the Opera. That one had six. I was shocked off my ass because I was not expecting that one. I was expecting, like you guys, Dracula. Because there have been so many versions of Dracula. But no, Phantom of the Opera was the one that actually had the most at six.
Huh. I didn't know there was that many of them.
Mm-hmm. There was one at the very beginning, of course, with
Lon Chaney.
Lon Chaney. There was another one with Claude Rains.
Oh, yeah.
Who was in The Wolfman.
Yeah, they showed that one on AMC during their Halloween weeks back in the day.
There were a couple others between the Claude Rains and the more recent one, which was the one with Gerard Butler. But do you really qualify that one as horror? No.
No, it's musical.
But because it is a remake of the original, theoretically, it counts.
Did they include Phantom of the Paradise?
No, oh, I remember that.
And we wrapped it back around to De Palma movies.
and incidentally, Melissa George's sidekick there, partner, is a man, just so we're
That's
all aware.
That's a dude?
They had a baby. In
okay, I'm looking at this picture.
Like a lady.
No shit, because I'm looking at this picture, and if that is a man, swear to God, I'm a Saint Bernard.
Apparently you're a St. Bernard because he is a man and got her pregnant. So
we'll get you a little keg to wear around your neck.
You'll have your own keg.
Oh my God, that cannot be a dude.
No, it is.
He's got lips like a woman, man. Pardon the pun.
Now you guys are going to make me have to look.
Oh my God. Because that is not her. That's got, oh my God. This is Scanners, boom!
I didn't know she was an Australian too. I thought she was a Brit. Oh well.
Okay, listening audience, Google this. Am I wrong?
No, I just texted you the link to show you. And the picture that's on this link that I sent you, he definitely looks like a guy. Not an overly attractive guy, but a guy.
Yeah, I just got your text, but I'm looking at the one on Google, and it looks like a woman. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. I think I know why it looks like a woman.
Somebody posted the wrong picture?
Yeah, they posted the wrong picture and put his name on it. Motherfucker.
That'll do it.
All I gotta say is woof, woof, woof.
Well, if we need any rum, we know to just call Dawn over. She'll have it right around her neck.
Sorry, it's Long Island's a my flask here. Sorry. Okay, that definitely looks like a dude. The other pictures, apparently they hid most of her forehead. That's all I'm going to say. Because I'm done. Next! Someone take over. I'm done.
There's pictures of him. This dude's got a beard.
I mean, that doesn't mean anything necessarily, though.
Cause yeah, because I've seen a couple men who've got Fu Manchus, man. Like, lady, I could beard your nose hair.
Oh, we got about another 10 or 15 minutes we can play around on here.
I got one more for you. The Hills Have Eyes.
As best or worst.
Just as a general sort of one that I liked, I wouldn't put it as best or worst. I put it middle of the road.
Yeah, I admit I was never a fan of either one of them. The first one I could take or leave. The second one, I felt it went a little too extremes, but Alexandre Aja, that's his style. I mean, he with Maniac, like we talked earlier, and then. He was also the one who did Piranha, High Tension. Yeah, he likes to do his extreme bits in his own way, but yeah, I don't know. I'll reserve discussion on that one because I'm just like, meh, on him.
Yeah, I kind of was, it, like, I didn't walk out of it going, oh my God. But I didn't walk out of it going, that was awesome. So, you know.
Yeah. How about you, Don?
As far as, like, just passable?
Opinions?
On, I'm sorry, I was kind of like getting...
Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, well, from the first podcast, you guys ought to know my opinion on that one.
It's been a couple months. Refresh our memory.
Sorry. Basically, I liked it to a degree. I kind of mentally checked out at the trailer rape whatever scene, and then when they went after the dogs, yeah, I was done. Oh. That's not my type of horror movie. It's done. And when you have to make jokes to bring yourself back to reality and people think you're laughing at the movie, you know, like, oh, this is funny. You monster! You bastard! Get away from my children! You know.
Well, they shouldn't have had their children at The Hills Have Eyes anyway.
You know?
Yeah.
It's funny you should bring that up. I mean, I have relatives that, they'll explain that what you're seeing, you know, like the beginning of the podcast, it's only a movie. They'll explain what they're seeing to the kids, but there are certain movies I remember going to see and just being shocked that a parent would allow their children in the theater to see this. It baffles my mind completely about what, you know, not to go onto a tangent, but where society has gone to where you'll see a 5-year-old seeing the Hills Have Eyes remake. And I wish I were making this up.
And I'm pretty liberal with, like, I'll watch a movie first and then mm-hmm. I'll decide if the kids can watch it or not. I know my kids' limits pretty well and I know my limits with what I feel comfortable introducing them to, but it would never, having seen the original, it would never occur to me to be like, ooh, Hills Have Eyes, totally bringing the kids.
Well, just a slight, I'm probably one of the few that actually enjoyed the original, but, Scary Movie, I actually thought that was hilarious, and it was actually the first movie Amanda and I went to go see together. I was shocked. I mean, if any of you've seen the movie, mm-hmm. there's some scenes in there I don't think a child should be seeing.
No.
Like, you know, specifically dick shots.
Well, yeah. Taking a weed whacker to her pubes.
Yeah.
So funny.
I'm sitting there and there's like these 7-year-old kids just walking around. Hee, 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 hee. This is funny. Mommy, this is funny. You shouldn't be seeing this. Your mommy needs to be bitch slapped.
Yeah. Yeah, I take some issue with that too. I mean, my own daughter, she's 12 and, she's been not sitting in for the whole movie, but, you know, coming and plopping her butt down on the couch when I've been working my way through my, Nightmare on Elm Street box set. I've made it through the first 5 movies and really the only bits, there's the random nudity that popped up after the, didn't start showing up till the 3rd one, Dream Warriors. And it's one of those things of I'm sitting there in the kitchen and our TV's just outside of the kitchen and I'm doing stuff. And then I started to remember, oh yeah, Danny's dream sequence with the nurse and oh, the getting tied with the tongues to the bed. And I remembered she had a very impressive rack and I'm like, I better go check on the kid. At the same time I'm checking on the kid, I got to make sure that the mom's not watching, that she's watching. So that's. We have differing opinions of what's acceptable for the child. I'm figuring for, I will say for myself, since she is a girl and she's getting of age, the little bits of nudity, depending on the context, I don't mind having her see, but she's still anything that I know has got a full on graphic sex scene or something that starts to allude to that. I'm like, yeah, close your eyes, kid.
Yeah, no.
But,
yeah, I already know if me and Amanda, it's not gonna happen, but if we ever had a child, that kid would be fucked up.
But in a good way.
In a should we alert the child services kind of way? Now, I don't think the child would be beaten, but that kid would come to school going, I got a lunchbox, look, and inside I have gizzards and I have intestines and I'm just going to make myself a Frankenstein monster.
That you're going to be alerting Child Protective Services for the other children's safety.
No. I say let them be warned in advance, but not that far in advance. I want them to at least get a good glimpse of fear before it strikes.
So I guess we've hit a decent point. So this is a good break point, I feel, for we're about an hour and a half in. So we can get a little wrap up in, and then we'll be coming back for fart two. We are full of hot air.
You better enter that next podcast with a like the scene from Blazing Saddles. I mean,
more you beans, Mr. Taggart. Yourself, I think you've had enough.
You kind of set us up for that one, so there you go.
Anyway, I digress. I almost said it again. Four, part two, enunciate. Lemon face. Hey, for part two of this topic, stick around for the great debate when we get into our love and hate of remakes, because I already know from the way things have been hinted at and alluded to so far for this hour and a half of discussion, we're going to have some debates. It'll be friendly. It'll be social. Because you can't flip tables over the internet, folks. Let's face it that way.
I'm sensing a little dig.
Speaking of table flips, I do have to say, did anyone else, totally horror unrelated, did you see the Disney short, with the dog called Feast?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious. One of our, I think it was Trisha, Favre posted it recently, and it hit home for her because it had, a dog named Winston in it, and, it's been a month or so ago that Winston the Wonder Pug had to be put to sleep, which was sad. But it's the video is funny. It's, I guess, it was nominated for one of the best animated shorts with the Oscars and stuff. But speaking of table flip, it's the whole thing of this guy takes home a stray dog, and everything's centered around feeding the dog. And there's this great bit in it where you see the dog just kind of trot out wearing a football jersey, and all these guys are watching football game, and the dog just looks at the table and then kicks back with his mouth wide open. And then all of a sudden it goes into slow-mo of everyone jumping up off the couch and flipping the table in the air, and all the snacks and Cheetos and chips go flying everywhere and just start dropping in the dog's mouth. It's a cute video. Anyway, anyone got anything they want to plug out or contacts or anything as we wrap up this episode and get ready for part two?
My polar plunges are done, but I do want to give a shout out. I'll do one on this one, one on the next one. First one, my sister has a birthday coming up in 2 days. Happy birthday, sis. Sorry I kept traumatizing you throughout the years.
That's a sibling's job.
Exactly. That's okay. She once broke her etch a sketch over my knee. It's all good. Didn't feel a thing, swear to God.
You got anything you want to share, Joe, before we head out?
Just follow us on Twitter at Podcast Macabre.
There you go. How about you, Jen?
Nope. I'm still just plugging along and, you know, hibernating a little bit, so.
Yeah, don't forget to, like I said earlier in the show, we have our Facebook page for Podcast Macabre. Please share comments, questions, suggestions, whatever. We like the interaction on the page. And I do have my own blog that I'm still doing, making it through the middle, over on blogger.com, going up weekly. So check it out. I mostly it's focused on my DDP yoga workouts and my fitness stuff I've been doing just to keep myself accountable and on track, but I do talk other random stuff on there, and I've got some horror related posts that are buried in the archives there. So I guess that wraps up part one of our remake discussion. So, tune in for part two, folks, and thanks for listening again. This has been Chris.
This has been Joe.
Jenny.
And I'm here somewhere, just we. Dawn.
So, catch you on part two, folks. Thanks for listening. Bye.